At the end of the day, why are we even doing the spiritual journey? I think a lot of spiritual people need to start twerking because they have fucking sticks up their asses and they're taking this shit way too seriously. Like, you're healing for what? You know, like, there's no gold star you get at the end. You're healing to experience joy. Mm-hmm. If you start shaking your ass, you will experience joy.
You really will.
Hey, hey, beautiful sun being, and welcome back to the Highest Self Podcast, a place where we discuss what makes you your soul's highest evolvement. If it's your first time listening, welcome to the party. It's never too late. It's just been happening for over 5 years, but in divine timing, we keep getting weirder. We're now talking about twerking and belly dancing as a form of spirituality, because that's just what happens when you live your truth. You're not afraid of showing your full expression. And that has definitely been my journey. So I started this podcast over 5 years ago. My first book came out 7 years ago, and I was really on a devoted spiritual journey. And I needed to learn about the ancient wisdom, the way that it has been taught for thousands of years. So I studied Ayurveda in India. I lived in India for 2 years studying this. I wrote my first book, second book, third book, all about Ayurveda. I wrote an oracle card deck, a yogic path. I created just so many pieces of content sharing this, but I realized what was missing in my own life and spiritual practice was the feminine. When I'm talking about the feminine, I'm not really talking about a gender here, but I'm talking about an energy. So I'm talking about the energy of movement, of creativity, of community, of caring about earth, of letting your body be a vessel for spirituality. So the more traditional masculine path of spirituality, which is what a lot of yoga and meditation is based on, which again, I studied Ashtanga, like I was a hardcore Mysore practice every day, raw vegan, like whole nine yards. But I also wasn't getting my period for over 2 years. And I was very disconnected from my sensuality and even my sense of playfulness and joy, which obviously you can hear here right now, has shifted. And so much of my learning has been about tuning back into the feminine, the sacral chakra energy, which is all about creativity, abundance, pleasure, joy, that frequency that I feel is so missing and so needed here on earth. And for me, dance has been the ultimate practice for this. And I'm not talking about dance like going to Millennium Studio and memorizing a really hard piece of choreography. Like, I can't do that. And nor do I want to, because that puts me more in my head. What I desire and what my practice has been letting my body move me. So being on the ecstatic dance floor. If you haven't heard of ecstatic dance, it's a free form movement expression where there's one rule, no talking. So you just get on that dance floor and everyone's just dancing their own experience. So through ecstatic dance, which I found when I was 23 years old, living in Bali by myself, I had just left India. I was not sure where I was going to go. I had no money, no real sense of purpose. I was writing my Ayurveda book. I hadn't yet gotten a book deal. I was not on speaking terms with my family. They wanted to send me to a mental asylum. It was a tough time. And I found myself on this ecstatic dance floor. And for the first time, I saw people just like fully unleashing themselves and letting their bodies move in the way that they wanted to without judgment. And my first couple of times on the ecstatic dance floor, I'm like doing my jazz choreography that I like remembered from high school. And then I start to drop in a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper and letting my body guide me. And it became my savior. It was my church. It was my temple. It was my Mecca. It was the place that I could truly connect to source. There were so many times on that ecstatic dance floor, I would go through just the gravest anger at my family for just not understanding me and not supporting me. And also just the sadness of them not understanding me and supporting me and us not being in touch. And the fear of like, what if I never make it? What if I never make money? Like, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen tomorrow? And the hope of here I am, look at the people around me, like look at what's possible, and the trust that they're no different than me. Like if they were able to create this reality for themselves, I can create my own too, based on my truth. And the curiosity, what is my truth? What is my purpose? Do I have a purpose? Do I not? And the joy and the celebration of like being in that crescendo peak where everyone's just like together and connecting. You don't need to say a word and you're just in the movement and in the expression. You're dancing and you're vibing and you're like, this is why I'm alive. And every peak and valley in between. That is what ecstatic dance did for me. And that is actually why I became a DJ, so I could create these experiences for other people, because that healed me more than reading any book or even listening to any podcast. And I do both things, but the frequency that we get through embodiment, through dance, through music transcends anything that the mind and the word can create, because it's an expression, it's a frequency. And that's what I feel so called to share. So I give you this backstory because it really speaks into why dance has become my spiritual practice. You know, so many of us look down on twerking, and, you know, even the word twerking, they believe the origins come from the NOLA bouncing word to work, twerk, to work. And the NOLA bouncing is what popularized the twerking movement, but it even came way before that. It comes from African dancing. In many parts of Africa, all parts of Africa have some form of gyrating hip movement. And I studied dance for many, many years, and I'm a trained belly dancer. And I've noticed that in all of these cultures, there has been a form of hip shaking, gyrating, and undulating that all feminine dance practices have, because that Shakti feminine energy is stored in the hips. When we trace it back, it's not twerking, it's African dancing. And this kind of dance was practiced for celebration, for birthing rites, to prepare the woman's bodies and hips to open, to bear birth to a child, but also what my Somalian friend recently shared with me, for funeral rites as well. Because when the women were wailing and feeling so much grief, the shaking actually helped them somatically release it from their body. And if you've read books such as You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay, you see that the hips are where we hold on to emotions. So what a perfect way to, when you're in the experience of grief, to simultaneously be releasing it through twerking and undulating your hips. And many people, when they're in ceremony and spiritual practices, that's the exact movement their bodies want to do, because the body knows. It knows that this is the way that we can not just heal, but celebrate and feel freedom on the other side. So this is why for me, twerking, belly dancing, Odissi, all of these different forms of dance that involve the hip are such a beautiful healing practice, because for the feminine, we don't want to be contained. We don't want to just sit all day. Yes, I do meditation. I do breath work, non-negotiable, every single day. Again, I'm an author and a CEO and many things in my life that are masculine for sure. And it's important to have that balance, but our society is so masculine. All we do is sit all day, that when do we allow space for the body to just tell us what it wants to do? And that's what these forms of dance do. So in this episode, I was actually interviewed by my friend Bianca Taylor on her podcast, all about how all of these forms of dance, twerking, belly dancing, shamanic shaking, are all forms of spirituality. And we also talk about getting off of birth control and some of the side effects of birth control that people don't speak about, as well as tuning into your dharma, your soul's purpose, and changing careers to be more in alignment with it. So this is a rich one. This is a juicy one. This is one, like, if you listen to this podcast, you know, and if you don't, this podcast will let you know what we stand for here. So without further ado, let's welcome Bianca and myself over here on the Highest Self Podcast. And before we get started, I'd love to share with you this special offer. So there's a lot of talk about morning routines. And if I have to be honest, there is one practice that I really stick to every single day. It's my non-negotiable, and that is breath work. It really just helps me open up the channels in my body and allow me to receive more creativity, insight, which really supports me in my dharma. And I have been loving the app Open. I actually have the founder Manoj here on the Highest Self Podcast. Incredible episode. I'll link it below. And this app is really just a modern approach to breath work. I mean, picture doing breath work to Berlin house music, and you basically got the vibe. And I also love that they have meditation and movement classes, and it's all under 10 minutes. So I love doing their breath work in the morning, but also their sleeping breath work at night, because it really just helps me calm my mind. So they're actually giving Highest Self Podcast listeners 30 days free. So you can head over to withopen.com/Sahara. Again, that's withopen.com/Sahara to get your 30 days free. And you can find that link in the show notes. And I'm super excited to see you in class.
I'm really excited today to sit down with Sahara Rose, somebody who makes amazing content, is an author, a podcast host, a fellow twerk and belly dance queen, which we love. So thank you so much for being here today.
I'm so excited. It's not every day I get to be on a podcast with a spiritual twerker. So this feels special.
You know, there's not a lot of us.
I know. So it's a rare breed.
Yeah. We have to
bad bitch genre.
Yeah, exactly. We have to stick together. Yes. So on that note, I think that's such a good, such a juicy topic, because we were kind of just talking about it off camera, is that a lot of women who are maybe on their spiritual journey or finding their way to their spiritual journey feel confused or conflicted about that other part of them, like that part, that sensual expression. And I feel like that's something that, you know, like we just mentioned, like you and I really like love and we celebrate it.
Yes.
So how did that journey begin for you? Like, were you always confident enough to like post a video twerking and then also in the next one be like, namaste, here's some advice?
Not at all. So my parents come from Iran, the Middle East, where women still don't have equal rights to men. They escaped from the war and revolution that happened there in the late 1970s. And my mom came to this country as a refugee, my dad as an immigrant, and it was all about survival. My grandmothers were both in forced child marriages when they were 11 years old.
Wow.
And no woman in my family has ever even worked before. Women have always been the property of men. So the idea of a woman being liberated, let alone sexually liberated, is unheard of in my lineage. The womb is considered a commodity. It's considered an ownership. It's considered something that men put their seed in to raise more son, to take the money. And women are considered basically like this annoying thing that you have to then sell off to another family. So that is my entire ancestral lineage, is all about the suppression of the feminine.
Wow.
So I believe that we are all born into the microcosm of the macrocosm that we're here to solve. So I needed to be born into this level of female suppression to see it firsthand, to see, you know, my grandmother share that my grandfather like chose her when she was playing hopscotch outside with her friends and like, oh, that's going to be my bride. And she was crying to her father saying, please don't make me marry this old man. Like, I had to grow up in that type of scenario to see how important it is for women to be free. So I naturally gravitated to dance because it's just such a free form of expression. There's really nothing like it where you're so embodied. And I didn't know it was a spiritual practice then. I also started doing yoga at a very young age when I was 12 years old and reading different yogic texts. But I never really saw dance as a spiritual practice until much later. I always felt just so elated, but I always thought spirituality is a linear, and what I had been taught is a masculine structure. Like, the yoga that we do at a yoga studio is very masculine. It was created by men for men. Actually, Ashtanga yoga was created to make prepubescent boys sit still and not be horny so they can then later join the military. So that's like actually when we're going to like core power yoga, like that's what we're doing. So it wasn't until years later that just like naturally my body wanted to twerk. Like, it wanted to vibrate. It wanted to undulate. It wanted to be free. And that's the energy of Kundalini, the serpent-like energy that moves through us, male, female, non-binary. It's the energy of prana, life force. So I could feel this energy within me, but I definitely felt shameful around it. I definitely didn't show it to other people. And sexuality to me was something that you like just did with your boyfriend, but like for him, but not for you. So finally, when I was like maybe 24 years old, I started to go to dance, like more hip hop dance classes in LA. And I ended up at a twerk shop. And that was the first time of really taking a class that was dedicated to twerking. And I was like, I feel like I'm naturally doing this, but like I'm around these other women who are doing the same thing. And that's when I started to really practice the art of twerk. So when I say twerking, I'm talking about, I mean, we think of Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B, but actually this dance form comes from the Congo. It comes from African dance culture where women would shake. And if you still look at many different tribes around the world, it's like a very natural primal dance form of like the womb connecting to earth. So I remember one day I went to a twerk class with my friend, and now this was like years later, I was probably 28, 29 years old. And he's a gay guy, and he shared it on his stories. And I was like, oh my God, like, you cannot share that on your stories. Because by then I had already had two books on Ayurveda. I was like spiritual teacher, white dress, mala beads, like the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. I'm like, people cannot know what to work, you know? And then he's like, wow, I'm getting such a great response about this. So then I reshared it and I'm like, am I safe? And I recognize, okay, I'm safe. And then I start to share a little bit more. Am I safe? Okay, yes, I'm safe. And I start to share more and more. And I start to get a response from people like, wow, like I want to do that too. Or wow, I didn't know that you dance. Or even like, what are you doing? Like, mm-hmm. That's disgusting. Who are you to do that? And I realized like what a response a woman in her femininity, in her power evokes, love and hate. Mm-hmm. And as I started to dive more into my own journey of expressing embodiment through dance, and then realizing that shaking is such a primal practice of releasing trauma and somatic blockages and emotions through our body, especially our hips. Mm-hmm. Our hips, now we know, is where we store emotions. Yep. So when you are twerking, when you're shimmying, you are literally releasing trauma, releasing stored emotions from your hips. When you're bending your knees, you're crouching on the floor, you're connecting to earth, you're connecting to the womb, you're restoring your energy. And that's why it's not even just an African dance, but in Middle Eastern dance, in Latin American dance, salsa mm-hmm. dance, bachata, every single dance form has some form of hip movement to it. This is also why zebras, when they're running away from a lion and they're about to get eaten and they make it into the nick of time, they shake their bodies off, release the trauma, and they come back to homeostasis. So I started to realize that as I was doing this, I was healing myself through all of these generations of collective trauma that now we know with epigenetics is actually stored within our systems. And I realized that twerking, shimmying, undulating, shaking truly is a spiritual practice. And now I share it as much as I can. It definitely evokes a reaction from people, and mm-hmm. we can dive into that because I know you've experienced it too. But then once people try it, and oftentimes it's the people who are first like, how can you do that? Like, because they've only seen twerking in a really mainstream media depicted way where it's like directed by a man for a man, and mm-hmm. the woman is not in her power. And like, that's what we think of sexuality as being sold back to us. But when we as women especially reclaim our sexual power for ourselves mm-hmm. and bring that erotic innocence back to it too, of like, I'm just doing it for my own fun. It's not for anyone else. There is such power in that, that those very same people often come back and they realize they just needed to twerk.
Yeah. Yeah. I've experienced the same response. Sometimes, you know, receiving messages saying I used to, you know, get really upset or triggered or annoyed when you would twerk. And then one day I decided to try it and I get it now. Yeah. And it's such also an empowering way to celebrate our bodies that we have been told for so long to not allow our bodies to jiggle, right? To tone and tighten mm-hmm. and be thin. And like, we don't want cellulite. Like, we don't want to jiggle. So when you take your power back with everything that you just said, connecting mm-hmm. to earth, releasing trauma from your hips, you're also celebrating your butt, your thighs, your belly, and just allowing that all to shake, saying mm-hmm. you don't tell me, the world doesn't tell me, men don't tell me that my body is not meant to jiggle. My body can move however it pleases. And that is such an empowering and spiritual practice.
Totally. Yes. Because even in yoga, in ballet, and all these practices, stiff. Tuck in, suck in, be straight. And I mean, even in the 90s, like having a big butt was not a good thing, mm-hmm. right? It's like Sir Mix-a-Lot, you know, mm-hmm. he's like, I like big butts. And like, that was considered a thing that was like only in like woman of color communities. Whereas now it's becoming mainstream, and there is a distortion happening for sure mm-hmm. in mainstream sexuality. But to me, people say, well, why do you feel like you need to show it on social media? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's when we are in authoritarian cultures, whether it's our government, our media, our parents, any form of tradition that's suppressing you, to fight back, you need to be the opposite. You need to show that resistance, mm-hmm. right? So for me, twerking is also an act of resistance to the patriarchy mm-hmm. because it's showing that I am not going to sit still and be quiet and do this for you on your time. I'm going to enjoy my body and do it in public at a concert and do it when I feel like it. And my husband's the one who's taking the videos. And it's like so out of people's norm. Mm-hmm. They're like, wait, you aren't single, like you're married and you're doing this, you're Middle Eastern and you're doing this. And to me, it's giving people that permission slip to step outside of whatever box they've mm-hmm. put themselves into and to reclaim the thing that brings you joy. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, why are we doing the spiritual journey? I think a lot of spiritual people need to start twerking because they have fucking sticks up their asses and they're taking this shit way too seriously. Like, you're healing for what? You mm-hmm. know, like there's no gold star you get at the end. You're healing to experience joy. Mm-hmm. If you start shaking your ass, you will experience joy.
you really yeah. will. It's so much fun. It's good exercise. Yeah. It feels so good. There's so many benefits to it. And like you mentioned, dance being an embodied practice mm-hmm. and embodiment is a word, one of my favorite words.
Yes.
It really just summarizes like a huge part of the spiritual journey, because when people are on our spiritual journeys, we can find that we get so stuck in our head and we start thinking, oh, okay, I need to become more self-aware. I need to do this and do that. And like you said, like literally have a stick up their butt. Mm-hmm. And then they do all of the practices that can be very stiff.
Like spiritually constipated.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you really come into embodiment, that's another like layer that you peel back of healing. Mm-hmm. And for the feminine, especially for women, I have found that to be so, so important. Mm-hmm.
And you can feel the energy around how someone is dancing, right? Like you can feel the difference of someone who's dancing for themselves and someone who's dancing for someone else. Just like you can tell the difference of someone who's dressing for themselves or dressing for someone else. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes we get triggered because we're perpetuating whatever we're doing it for and we're assuming it's the other person. It's hard for us to believe that someone is just enjoying themselves mm-hmm. and like that's it. They're just doing it for them and it's fun for them. And you know, for me too, just like when we can talk about coming out of the spiritual closet, it's even like coming out of the Torah closet, yeah. right? Like that is a closet of like, it's most of the resistance comes from other women, mm-hmm. you know? And it does become, I think, this like innate feminine wound of, if you are attracting attention, it will take away from me. Mm-hmm. And it's like this deep fear that is real. Like there is such abandonment that is in the collective feminine shadow that the patriarchy has inflicted before us. So when mm-hmm. we see a woman who's sexy, who's in her power, a subconscious fear happens of, then there will be less for me.
Yeah.
Then my man will leave me. Then people will forget about me. And that's really the work to sit with. It's that mm-hmm. feeling of unworthiness and that feeling of a woman's beauty is not taking away from your own. In fact, it's a recognition. It's a mirror of your own. Mm-hmm. And not everyone needs to twerk per se. Someone else might love to do salsa. Mm-hmm. Someone else might love to do Bharatanatyam, traditional Indian dance, or whatever it is. But I think dance, having some form of free flow, non-linear mm-hmm. movement is so essential, especially for the feminine path of spirituality, which again, both male, female, and non-gender can experience.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about coming out of the spiritual closet. Like I mentioned, I've talked about it before with some other guests and—
I'm out of the closet.
Yeah. and I've been coming out of my closet with this podcast mm-hmm. And just over the past 6 months or so since I really deepened. I've been on my spiritual journey for a number of years, but then in November I had an explant done. Mm-hmm. And that was, I mean, it just cracked my heart open, literally. Yeah. I mean, was right on my heart center. Mm-hmm. And that was when I had this call to start making more content about spirituality and having conversations and talking about all of the stuff we're talking about here. And I experienced a lot of fear and that witch hunt shame. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be burned at the stake if people think that I'm doing something wrong. And my own kind of religious trauma as well, with having a history growing up in a Baptist Christian church. You know, I was baptized when I was 12, my own decision, because I've always had, honestly, a call to spirituality. I've always wanted to be close to source. And so that was the way that it showed up for me. Right. So I know that a lot of other people experience that same fear of, I really want to talk about spirituality online, or even just be more open about it in their own life with their friends and their family. And they experience that like fear and that shame. So I wonder what that journey was like for you when that started, maybe before you started your journey with Ayurveda, or if it was maybe after that.
Mm-hmm. So I started blogging like 12 years ago as a food blogger. My blog was called Eat, Feel Fresh. And I did that really for 7+ years. And I remember finally in 2017, I was so sick of talking about food and making these recipes and taking pictures of them. And I was like, for what? Like, what am I doing this for? What's the end goal of this? Mm-hmm. And I personally was so interested in past lives and karma and why are we here? And like that, those were the rabbit holes I was going through. And I genuinely wanted a place to be able to discuss it, especially in a more grounded approach. I'm also a woman of color. And it's just like, I felt like a lot of the spirituality was very like whitewashed LA Valley girl. And I'm like, I want a side of twerk with my spirituality, you know? So I was so scared to change my Instagram from my blog name, Eat Feel Fresh, to my name, I Am Sahara Rose. I was prepared for everyone to unfollow me, the end of my career to happen, but I couldn't just post another recipe anymore. Mm-hmm. It just felt like I wasn't living my truth. So I remember I finally at like midnight, I like changed the thing and I like wrote this thing and I'm like, I understand if you want to unfollow me, but like, I got to be honest with myself. And I mean, most people just don't care, you know, like people kind of like come and go out of your field. We think it's the end of the world. So that's when I started my podcast, Highest Self Podcast, 5 years ago. And since then, it has been such a beautiful journey because in me sharing, it gave voice for so many people who are like, I felt the same way too. And I've just never seen anyone that looks like me talking about it, who has similar interests to me talk about it, who's speaking about it in this way that just resonates for me. So the moment I started sharing, I was really just like welcomed with open arms. And I believe that when we're living in alignment with our dharma, our soul's purpose, we experience the flow, the kriya, the synchronicities, mm-hmm. the path of least resistance that people talk about. But sometimes to get to that path of least resistance, you first must follow the path you're the most resistant to. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was like basically the end of my career. I had just come out with like an Ayurveda book and I had a cookbook coming out, but I just couldn't do it anymore. And this fear, I think, of coming out of the spiritual closet is actually a very deep rooted fear throughout history. So again, epigenetics, we hold on to trauma intergenerationally. So woman, since the beginning of the patriarchal era, so over 2000 years ago, before this, it wasn't actually patriarchal, but when the patriarchal agenda started to come forth, it actually saw the power of women going against each other. So if you look at the witch hunt, they used to, and the witch, I actually grew up right near Salem, Massachusetts. I was like a witch growing up and I would like go there all the time and I was just obsessed with it. And what they would do back then is if someone in the village was considered to be a witch, they would go to all of the different girls there and be like, do you know anything about Bianca being a witch? Do you know anything? And if you gave me even a peep, then you're considered a witch too. Hmm. So having friends was considered a danger because the more people knew your name, the more people could throw you under the bus and that's more likely for you to be killed. Mm-hmm. So women start to see other women as huge threats of, I can't even let women see me, know me, because that means my name could be thrown into the hat of being a witch. Mm-hmm. And since then, this divide has been happening of, and I think a lot of us have this deep-rooted fear, which is perpetuated by cancel culture of, if I say the wrong thing, if I'm too out there, if I'm too woo-woo, groups of people, mobs of people will come against me and it will be the end of me. And I've had to do like past life regressions. And even in this lifetime, I was thrown down a hill. In fourth grade, I got a concussion because the kids said I was a witch. And like, I needed, like for real, and I needed to experience that in this lifetime to realize that to get through the karma, you know, like we have lessons in our life that we keep repeating until we've learned the lesson of. So I think a lot of us have been witches reborn in this lifetime to realize it is safe mm-hmm. for me to be magical. It is safe for me to speak my truth. And I am safe even if people don't like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's huge. And it really says a lot, everything you mentioned about the kind of that ancestral pain that we carry and having to walk through it in this lifetime. And it does feel like there's a really big wave of women and all people, but of witches yes. kind of coming back to heal from mm-hmm. all of the pain that we've endured for so many generations. Mm-hmm. And doing that through community, through sisterhood, through being expressive about our spiritual journey, because that awakens the next witch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially with the power of social media, you know, people may not even be activated yet mm-hmm. until they see a post from somebody and then they start asking themselves questions and then they go read a book and they start their journey.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And even the meaning of the word witch is wise woman. Like we think of witch as like, you know, Hocus Pocus, which again, mm-hmm. I love that movie, but like that wasn't the best depiction of witches. Like,
right, you know,
but the word witch, like when they called someone a witch, these were healers. Mm-hmm. These were medicine women. These were people who worked with sound. These were people who were doulas and midwives. I mean, even till this day, midwives and doulas are being killed in Guatemala. Women who are working with medicine are being killed in many parts of Africa. Women who have any form of intuition or practice in the Middle East are being killed. I have a friend in Egypt who was sent to jail for having a yoga center.
Wow.
So like this is still happening. Like the wound is real because a woman who's in touch with her intuition is powerful. Mm-hmm. And the patriarchy knows that. So they try as hard as possible to suppress us from our innate nature because deep down inside, they know that women carry the codes. We carry the hologram that creates all life, the womb. Mm-hmm. Every single person was created in a womb. We have a portal that is able to take the non-physical into the physical. And that's why in ancient times, we gathered in a red tent when we were bleeding. And we would sit under this red tent together and bleed on our menstrual cycles and sing and read poetry. And the men would come to us with questions for the village of which direction should we go and what should we do about this? And because the veils were so thin when we were bleeding, we would give them the answer. Mm-hmm. But with the patriarchal shift, and you could say it was the beginning of a lot of monotheistic modern day religions, you know, it wasn't an overnight thing. It was a gradual process with the Roman Empire. And you can really look into that. But right now, I mean, there is this rising of the feminine, but we still have a long way to go. I mean, yeah. Female reproductive rights right now are still being questioned by our Supreme Court. And I think that this is why it's so important for women to come together and mm-hmm. to realize the patriarchal shaming within ourselves that we're so focused. All the things I see about cancel culture are women tearing down other women.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see men doing it to other men. Mm-hmm. And that's divide and conquer. Because if we're all tearing each other down, then the patriarchy continues.
Right.
We'll take a quick break so I can share with you this special offer. So have you been on your spiritual journey for a while, but to be honest, you don't resonate with a lot of the practices, like hours of seated meditation or reading all these really heady spiritual books, but instead you're craving something that invites the full you, that allows you to be radiant and beautiful and connecting with your intuition and womb wisdom? Well, I felt the exact same way on my spiritual journey. I went from spending hours doing really rigid Ashtanga yoga every year, where I actually lost my period for over 2 years and even went into perimenopause in my early 20s, into connecting back with my sacred feminine energy. And this is exactly what I share in my new course, Divine Feminine Embodiment. So this is really about dropping out of the mind and into the body, because the truth is a lot of the spiritual practice that we hear about right now really were created by men for men. And our culture is very masculine as well. It's very focused on productivity and hustle. And if you're ready to go beyond that and reclaiming your ease, your joy, your bliss, your juiciness, your dance, then this course is for you. So I discuss the different art forms of divine feminine wisdom, such as the art of magnetism, the art of embodiment, the art of ritual, and so much more. So this is also a really powerful entry point into stepping into deeper sacred feminine work. I teach you my goddess embodiment practice, my goddess breathwork practice, and much more. So if you're interested and curious to learn more about what's inside, head over to divinefemininecourse.com. Again, that's divinefemininecourse.com. You can find that link in the show notes. This month, the course is over 50% off as our special introductory price. So I highly recommend diving into it right now and beginning your sacred feminine immersion.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And I believe that this is, you know, we have opportunity to reclaim the word witch, to reclaim our, like, not having shame over our menstrual cycles yep. as well. And for speaking up about our reproductive rights. I actually have a tattoo that says witch.
So I love it.
Bruja, which is Spanish.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that as we, you know, as content creators continue to share our messages and our own spiritual journeys mm-hmm. and practices online, it allows more women to awaken and to come together. And I don't know if you've ever received this, but I've received a lot of messages, kind of like I mentioned with the twerk kind of comment. Women would message me saying that they felt a lot of anger or, you know, not good feelings towards me. And then over time, they went on their own feminist journey and they started to realize all this internal misogyny that they harnessed. And then they would come back and apologize. Mm-hmm. And it's actually really cool. I don't ever have any anger when women send me messages. Like, I'm never that person. I'm like, yay, welcome. Yeah. Welcome to the sisterhood. Like, when women come together, we are extremely powerful. Mm-hmm. And I've become so... the more spiritual I become, the more fascinated I get with periods as well, because I used to, just like everybody, I'm sure, find that time of the month really shameful. You feel ugly.
Stick a tampon in. Yeah, get it over with.
Yeah, you stick a tampon in, and when you have to like pass a tampon to another girl in public,
you're buying a tampon. It was like they taught you that should be shameful. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And I've just done a complete 180 now. Like, I love the whole... You know, I'm not saying that I'm like, yay, my period's here, but it's like, I have so much respect.
Oh, girl, it's like Christmas Eve for me. I'm like, my body is healthy enough to bleed. I didn't get my period for 2 years because I was doing so much Ashtanga yoga and I was raw vegan. And I was like so in my masculine that my feminine energy literally cut off. I didn't bleed for 2 years. So that made me realize like the power and the gift it is to bleed. Like, if you are menstruating, that means your body thinks it's healthy enough to be able to create life, whether you want to do that or not. Mm-hmm. And so many women right now are not menstruating or they're taking birth control and that's not a real period. So they don't know what are the underlying... I didn't know what my underlying issues were until I got off birth control and I realized, wait, my body's not even producing hormones anymore.
Yeah. I also lost my period for about a year after I did bodybuilding because my body fat had gotten so low. I was extremely... I looked really fit, but I was so thin and didn't have any body fat. And so I stopped getting my period. Mm-hmm. And then I like to say it came back with vengeance. Like it came back and it was like really intense. And that was, you know, part of
She's like, listen to me.
Yeah. She's like, I'm back, bitch. You better listen. Yeah.
You better work.
Yeah. And now, it's been such a journey, the like celebrating my period and that time of the month. And I like that you brought up birth control as well, because it's a question I get asked surprisingly a lot. People ask me, what about birth control? I was on the birth control pill when I was 15 for I think 2 years. And when I got off of it, I felt completely crazy. I felt like I wasn't myself, my mood, my depression, it was just a roller coaster. Yeah. And so, you know, I learned how to just, track my ovulation. And when you learn how to track your cycle, you realize how that feminine cycle that we have, 28 to 30 something days depending on each person's body, there's so much to learn week by week when we're in our follicular phase and we have energy that's completely different from when we're in our luteal phase and we need to kind of be more at home and be more resting, and so when we're menstruating, and the fact that it syncs with the moon, I mean, it's just, women are just we're just so cool.
We're so magical.
It's so magical.
Yes. And birth control is going to be considered the largest medical experiment of our time.
Wow.
We don't know what are the long-term repercussions. I consider myself to be a feminist as well. And the 1960s feminist movement was very needed. However, we did not know what medically happens long-term with birth control. I think birth control is very important and women should not be forced to have children, when they're teenagers. However, birth control pills are not the only solution. We are taught that they are. Mm-hmm. And have you heard that birth control is actually called the divorce pill? Have you heard about this?
I haven't heard it called the divorce pill. I did watch an episode of Explained on Netflix about birth control.
About the pheromones?
Yeah. It's just really, really interesting. I mean, we know that there's so many, side effects and everything to it, but it really just... like the pamphlet that comes with it. It's like when you unfold the pamphlet, it's like this big.
It's like blood clots, this, that. So they call it a divorce pill because there were a lot of women, like thousands upon thousands of women, who would meet their partner, get married, get off a birth control pill and be trying to have a child. But all of a sudden they could not stand how their husband smelled. Something about him was repelling to them. And it was causing many women to get divorced.
Wow.
So scientists started to look into this of like, why is this happening? Like, what is the common cause between all these different people? And they realized it was the fact that they had met their partner on birth control and then gotten off. So when you are on birth control, your body thinks it's pregnant. Mm-hmm. When your body thinks it's pregnant, it wants family near it. It wants people with a similar immune system to you, kin. And that's why often, especially in the first trimester, women are actually repelled from their partners, right? Mm-hmm. So our bodies think we're pregnant when we're on birth control pills. Now, when we get off birth control pills, our bodies start to look for a mate again. When we're looking for a mate, we're naturally looking for someone with an opposite immune system to us because that's going to have the highest survivalhood of our offspring. Mm-hmm. So that's why when you just meet someone and just the pheromones and the attraction is there, it's often because you have very different and complementary immune systems. That's actually what's happening on a chemical basis. So these women were meeting men who had similar immune systems to them. And then when it was time for them to get off the pill, they couldn't stand how they smelled because it's to their body, it smelled like family. Mm-hmm. It's not someone you want to reproduce with.
Right.
So that's why if you are on birth control, I suggest, and of course, work with your doctor, work with your naturopath, Ayurvedic practitioner, whoever you want to work with to do it safely, but smell your partner, you know, because you don't know. And it's so intelligent how the body works that there's so many chemical subtleties that we don't realize. And if it's doing it to such a basis that it can create aversion to our partners, then like, what is it doing on a daily basis to all of these different factors in our bodies, from our bone density issues to our circadian rhythm cycles, mm-hmm. to our digestion, to our metabolism? It has effects on all of these different systems that we haven't fully understood the solution to.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I didn't know that about the pheromones, but yeah. It makes a lot of sense. And from my experience from when I was a teenager and I got off birth control, I experienced feeling like a completely different person mm-hmm. and feeling really out of control of my hormones and my mood and my body and just my skin and everything really changed. And so because of that, I've always, use other methods of birth control.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important for women to know that there are other options.
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, just because something is popularized doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best choice for our bodies.
For sure. Especially when it's medication.
Especially when it's medication. You want to do a little double check there before you
read those side effects.
Yeah.
I know this episode is good, but so is this sponsor.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all need someone to lean on, or at least someone to talk to, because life is crazy and a lot goes on that's out of our control. And sometimes we just need someone to hear us out, to give us the support that we need so we can come back into alignment. And this is why therapy is so important. It's nothing to be ashamed about, like former generations have felt, but it's actually, to me, I'm like, shout your therapist out, because a girl's always looking for a good one. And I find a lot of really great ones with BetterHelp. That's where I'm currently matched with one. I love them because you don't need to actually drive anywhere and be stuck in traffic and be like stressed out about going to your therapist, but it makes it really easy. They're all online, they're affordable, and they'll match you with a new one according to your survey. So you can fill out information about yourself and get matched with your perfect therapist and actually try out different ones until you find your right fit. So to get 10% off your first month, head over to betterhelp.com/Sahara. Again, that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/Sahara. And you can find that link in the show notes.
So I want to also ask about, I know your book is called Find Your Dharma.
Discover Your Dharma. Yes.
And that's a big topic that you talk about. And I want to touch on it a little bit. You mentioned, earlier in our conversation, Dharma is essentially your purpose. And I know a lot of people are not living in their purpose. They are going to work. They are doing the 9-to-5 thing. They're plugged into the matrix. They want to break out. They feel like their purpose is bigger, but they are stuck in that place where it's, well, I feel like my purpose is bigger. I don't really know what that is. And if I quit, then I won't be able to pay my bills. So what am I going to do in the meantime? That little loop that keeps them stuck mm-hmm. in there. So with all of the work that you've done, around helping people discovering their Dharma, how do you help people make that transition?
Mm. So living your Dharma, your soul's purpose, the big reason why you are here, is the most important work that you can do in this lifetime. So when I had my health issues, I had issues with my family, my parents disowned me, like so many things, living my purpose was the thing that allowed me to get through all of it, because life can be hard and it can be dense, and you need to have that North Star of something greater than you. And your Dharma is where your highest form of joy meets your highest form of service. So I have many, many different tools. One of them is taking this quiz I've created called the Dharma Archetype Quiz. So it's, what is your main archetype? Are you a teacher? Someone who's here to guide and share wisdom with people? Are you a nurturer? Someone who's here to care and connect and hold space? Are you an entrepreneur? Here to create solutions for world's problems? Are you a visionary? Here to share inspiring messages? Are you a researcher? Here to dive in and get information and look at the facts and data? Are you an activist? Here to raise awareness about social justice causes? Are you a warrior? Here to use your energy, especially physical energy, for a shared goal? So I have this quiz at Dharma, D-H-A-R-M-A, archetypequiz.com. We can dive into all the archetypes, but I feel like that's the best place to start, because when I did not know my purpose, it was hard for me to even think, because I didn't even know what I was good at, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes it takes you being part of an archetype that's greater than you, and you're like, okay, I know I have qualities of the teacher and I have qualities of the artist per se. So who are the people that inspire me who are also teacher and artist? What are the mediums that come through me? And then you look next and say, okay, what's exciting for me right now? What are the things I'm Google searching? What are the podcasts I'm listening to? What are the conversations I want to have? And then you look at obstacles you've overcome in your life. I have this whole Dharma blueprint that people can go through of putting together their superpowers, their obstacles, their archetypes, and giving them something really actionable to put their energy towards. Mm-hmm. So your Dharma is not just one thing. Like, I think sometimes we think, oh, I need to find my purpose and it's this one thing, and like, that's what I'm going to do forever. Mm-hmm. But your Dharma really has iterations. It's like soul contracts, right? So you, for example, I had a soul contract to write books on Ayurveda and bring Ayurveda to the millennials. Mm-hmm. And then it was very clear to me when that contract was complete, because I no longer wanted to talk about Ayurveda anymore. I had other things that were interesting to me. And I started to ask, well, what is the purpose of even being healthy? It's about living your purpose. And that brought me into my Dharma journey. So it's really about following that red thread that's connecting different experiences and moments in your life. And then that joy, that excitement towards where it's guiding you next.
Mm-hmm. I love that you mentioned the evolution of it and the soul contracts, because I think that that's another piece that can cause people to get really stuck in places, including myself. And I've gone through, I feel like, so many lifetimes in this lifetime.
Yes.
I have been a student. I have been a caretaker for children. I've been a dancer, I've been a content creator, I've been like so many different types of content creators.
So you got the nurture archetype, the teacher, the artist, the entertainer.
Yeah, a personal trainer. I also travel the world to speak about veganism. So there's like activists there, you know, and, you know, I've experienced that. And even so recently with, you know, making my decision to quit OnlyFans and to kind of shift from doing like sexy content, it really felt like for me, I was, you know, when I was making like sensual content, it really was a celebration of my sensual self, which was really important. And I felt like I needed to share that and activate other women in that way. And I also enjoyed making money from it. And then there came a point when it was over.
Yeah.
And I just felt like this knowing and learning how to honor that truth when it's time to change, like for you, okay, I don't want to make recipes anymore. Yeah. Like, I want to talk about this stuff now. And I think, because, you know, when we're little and people ask us, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a teacher, or I want to be an astronaut. And then you think that that one thing is the one thing that you have to do until you die.
Yep.
When it's really, we can have all of these different experiences. Mm-hmm. And like you said, following that thread that kind of strings them all along, and cultivating all of the different lessons and wisdom and tools that we cultivate through each experience.
Yes. And your purpose is not what you do, but rather it's a frequency that you embody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think so often we look for our purpose in terms of an action, a career, a project, and it may manifest in those forms, but it's your energetic signature. It's what you bring through every conversation you have, interaction you have, project and role that you play. And that really is what your dharma is. So for me, whether I'm doing an interview with you here, before I was doing like this Ayurveda, like old school documentary, wherever it is, it's my frequency, it's my signature, it's the way that I talk, it's the examples I give, it's my essence. That is my purpose that can be in many different types of conversations and forms. So really when people are looking for their purpose, you're looking for yourself. You're looking for your truth. You're really looking to get to know you. So that's why doing quizzes like the Dharma Archetype Quiz or diving into your Myers-Briggs and Enneagram, diving into your shadows and your trauma, diving into your dreams and your desires. The more you get to know yourself, the more your Dharma naturally unfolds. Mm-hmm. So many of us were looking for a purpose like it's a game of Where's Waldo, you know? We're like, where that bitch at? And it's like, your purpose is you being you to your fullest expression. Mm-hmm. And when you are you to your fullest expression, you can't help but do. Like, here's one of my things, my pet peeves in the spiritual community. Everyone's like, I'm a human being, not a human doing. And it's like, yes, we are here to be, but when you're so naturally in your being, you want to create. Mm-hmm. And we humans are here to create. I think creativity is the highest form of spirituality because we're able to take ideas and bring them to life. Mm-hmm. Like, we are the womb. We're here taking the non-tangible into the tangible. Like, that is the most out of this world thing possible, right? So when we are creatives, whether it's creating a podcast, whether it's creating your garden, whether it's creating whatever it is that's really coming from your essence and your heart, that is you living your dharma.
Wow. Snaps. I love that. And I think, you know, I love that you mentioned creativity because part of my journey has really been following the my creative calling from whatever felt natural to me in that moment. And I know it always looked a little crazy to my family.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can relate.
Yes.
You know, because I also paint, you know, I paint, I dance, I make content, I make podcasts.
All the Shakti energy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, oh, it's always very Shakti energy. And that I just followed that flow. And following that flow, it always leads me to the next thing. Then I create a coaching program, a community, a retreat, experiences, and asking myself, you know, kind of checking with myself and seeing where I'm at and where I've evolved to, and then what is calling me into creation. Like, what do I feel like creating right now? And then from there, it's always the next step in my journey as an entrepreneur.
Yes, we are here to literally be living orgasms, to orgasm through that creation. So it's not coming, you can't force the orgasm and think about it and plan it out and map it out. It's going to come at minute three. It's like, it happens when you surrender. And it's when you surrender to your creative flow and you allow yourself to be a channel. It's just moving through you. And I think the challenge of that comes in the social media world. And I struggle with it too, of like a personal brand, right? Because it's like, to build a personal brand, and I'm using this in quote marks because I don't even believe it truly can exist, because you're a person before a brand, you have to repeat the same thing again and again and again, but we're changing on a daily basis. So it confuses people because we're so not used to it. We're used to a brand being like Coca-Cola, it's the freaking polar bear forever, you know? So then when I see, let's say I'm following you and you're like, wait, shit, she's painting one day. So is she a painter? Wait, now she's dancing. Now she's doing fitness things. Now she's coaching. Like, I can't put her in a box. Definitely I don't understand how my followers feel. I can't. But it's like, you're a multifaceted human being and so are they.
Yeah.
And your frequency that you bring to your painting and you bring to your dancing, you bring to your coaching, you bring to the podcast, that's your brand. So I think that we need to step away from thinking that a brand and a niche is one action and thing and move into it as a frequency that also will shift and evolve over time. But I will say that when you step into really who you are, it's like a landing that happens. So I see sometimes people when they're like newer to the coaching space, content creation space, they're like really changing their brands a lot, that they're like, okay, now I'm a human design expert with like all white font. And they're like, now I'm an aura expert, and they like delete their old account and it's like something new. And it's, you're almost like trying on different identities. But when you really land into who you are, there's less of that shift. And then you can do all of the things, but you're like bringing your essence to it. Like Frida Kahlo, you know, like whether it's her fashion or her art or her singing or anything that she does, it has the Frida essence to it. And that's really what we're all here to be. We're all here to be our own fragrance.
Yeah. I love that. And I definitely,
I've experienced it myself, and I know other people have, is that who do I show up as on social media? Yeah. And when I'm evolving, am I allowed to change? And it can feel really vulnerable as well to have your evolution so public.
Because people are like, I liked the old you. Oh, I miss the old Kanye. Oh,
literally, like I was for a couple of months, it kind of stopped now, but for a couple of months, people pretty much just men would comment and say, oh, I liked you better when you had boobs. And I'm like, okay, well, she's dead, RIP. Like, right. I ain't got like the same boobs anymore. So what do you like?
Who the fuck do you think you are? Yeah. It's like, I'm not a TV show bitch. Like, even they change season by season. Like, why should I change the same? And there's a level of entitlement that happens with social media too, of people like, no, I subscribe to the Bianca boobs channel. So it needs to be that channel perpetually, because you are in this area of my mind that I have depicted you as this one thing for this one void. So if you change, that means I have to change where I've sorted you. And that's too much work for me. And it's like, friends change, relationships change, your partner changes. We're on a moving planet that's moving at thousands of light years through space. Like, if you think anything in this world is going to remain the same, you're fucking crazy.
Right.
So it's like, people are going to change. And like, guess what? You can unfollow, you can move on, or you can use it as inspiration. Like, you don't need to completely agree with someone. You don't even need to really like everything about someone. I think that's the entitlement piece of like, we expect people to be like, these content TV shows to give me exactly what I need when I need it. But it's like, and I see this happen even with friendships. It's like friendships in the social media age have become so transactional that it's like, you're supposed to be my friend that listens to me whenever I have a problem. You're supposed to be my friend that always wants to go out with me. You're supposed to be my friend with this. And if that friend changes, we're like, I need to replace you. But it's like, back in the day when we lived in villages, we just accepted people throughout whatever stage of their lives that we were at. And I think we need the same level of acceptance, because we actually might learn from someone a lot more when they're showing up in a new way that we've never seen before.
Yeah, there definitely is a massive feeling of entitlement. And I think that it's important for people to reflect upon whatever's coming up in them when, if somebody you're following starts posting different content, and, you know, if you want to unfollow them, you can, but why do you feel so activated by somebody changing their hobbies or what they share or their business, or?
Because they probably aren't changing themselves.
Yeah.
So it's triggering what you have stepped outside of the box that they have put themselves into. So it's like, I don't allow myself to change, so therefore you must not change. Because if you're changing, that means I have the potential to change, but that's too much responsibility for me to hold. So I would rather make you wrong for growing than admit that I am not on a growth journey. And that's the truth of it.
Yeah. Yep. Snaps.
Oh.
So what are you creating right now?
Yes. So I've written 4 books and had a podcast for 5 years, and I run a business and like all the things. And I was like, okay, what do I do next? And I was like, honestly, like what, when I think of what is my highest form of joy, like when have I been the happiest? I think of when I lived in Bali and I was ecstatic dancing, and there was always some sort of gathering going on, whether it's like authentic relating or improv or karaoke or kirtan or whatever. And I'm like, I so miss that, like being in community, creating, like going with the flow. And I feel like we're so isolated. And even myself, like more recently, I experienced, even though I have so many friends, so many people, but like this like deep-seated loneliness that I was like, where is this coming from? And I realized it's like, even when you have meet up with friends, it's like, okay, 2 weeks from now, we're going to meet at this time. And it's like this thing you need to like plan and like put a lot of energy towards. And I'm like, I miss that flow. So I'm like, okay, I guess I need to move to Bali. And my husband's like, well, I'm not going to move to Bali, so what's going to go on? And I'm like, okay, how can I create this type of community and creativity? My husband works in the music industry. He manages artists and producers. So we came together, and this is very recent creation, but like it's happening, to really birth this center of creativity in Miami, which is where we live, that has music studios, podcast studios, places for events. So you could like be recording your album and then do a cacao ceremony and have ecstatic dance there and have beautiful conversations and do art and photography and improv and karaoke and like all of these different forms of creativity in a multi-purpose space where you're really collaborating with people. Mm-hmm. I know I get my best ideas through conversation. When mm-hmm. I'm like talking to you, when I'm listening to a podcast, when I'm coaching someone, it sparks something in me that I don't get when I'm by myself. So I want to create a space that people can really drop in and create art. I really believe and I was a hardcore activist, my entire teen years. I was president of my Amnesty International chapter. I went to school in DC. I studied international human rights law, really deep in the social justice space. And I realized even the purpose of that is to bring beauty and joy to the world. Mm-hmm. And that art, again, is our highest purpose. Mm-hmm. So to be able to just create and be channels for art, because art can really speak words and even beyond words, vibration into topics that no book, I was going to write a book about joy and I still might, but I'm like, does one read a book about joy and become joyful? Mm-hmm. That hasn't been my experience. Joy comes for me when I'm connected, when I'm singing, when I'm dancing, when I'm evoking my inner child. Mm-hmm. So the next iteration of my Dharma is to create that place that people can go and drop in. So our next podcast will be there.
Yay. That's so exciting. Yeah. Wow. That's going to be so cool. I'll definitely have to come and visit and mm-hmm. check it out. I think, what you mentioned, kind of bringing out that inner child. And it's when we're children, we have when you go to a preschool, they have all of these different activity rooms and you get to go, you can play on the playground, mm-hmm. you go to the arts and craft room. You have kind of this different experience.
It's the best. I want to go to summer camp.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Summer camp, exactly. And then as adults, we kind of all isolate in our homes and mm-hmm. we lose touch with that sense of community and that creativity mixed with community, because mm-hmm. that's when it really can just become something so special. I mean, music, obviously, music, one person singing and playing the guitar is great, but you throw in a couple more people and now you have a band and now you create something, something beautiful. And then same with dance, right? It's mm-hmm. Dancing by yourself is really fun and great. Dancing with a group of women yes. is the best thing in the world.
Totally. Because something when we're around other people just gets activated within ourselves, and healing has always happened communally. This individualistic form of healing is less than 100 years old. Mm-hmm. There's this interesting story that after the Rwandan genocide, they sent these top psychiatrists from the US government to Rwanda to work with the people there. And after a few days, they kicked them out of the village. And the government's like, wait, why did you just kick out? These are our top psychiatrists here. And they're like, no. I think you sent the wrong people mm-hmm. because these people wanted to take us away from our community to be in a dark room by ourselves and keep talking about what happened. Mm-hmm. But in Rwanda, the way that we heal is that we go outside under the sun mm-hmm. and we hold hands and we sing and we dance the drumbeat in community. That is how we heal. Mm-hmm. And I think to really look at that joy-based healing, community-based healing, it doesn't have to be analyzing the problem again and again and again and again. Again, there's a time and space for that. But sometimes the best way to heal is to stop identifying so much with the mind. Mm-hmm. And we're so obsessed with this analyzation and healing and fixing that we've turned again patriarchal culture into our spiritual and healing journey again, that there's mm-hmm. something inherently wrong with us, that you're never going to be totally healed mm-hmm. for as long as you're alive. There's going to be another past life to heal, another childhood thing, another forever, Yeah. And it's are you going to make that the purpose of your entire existence, or are you going to create art out of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I'm in the same place as well, coming back into my art journey really over the past couple of years as I've deepened my healing journey. And that really feels like it's what's next for me too, is to spend more time painting and dancing and
yes.
putting all of the, I've done a lot of hard healing stuff. I know that there will always be more that comes up, but now with all of this stuff, I'm like, okay, I learned all this stuff. What do I do with it?
Yes.
Create with it. So.
Exactly. That energy of transmutation. Mm-hmm. I think so many of us, we're just used to things always being hard. Mm-hmm. And that's our mindset, that we always need to be struggling. We always need to be working on something in a really, really hard way. But it's you can do that forever and be on your deathbed. And I don't think anyone's I'm so glad I did a million ayahuasca ceremonies and a million hours of shaman work, or I made $1 million. No one talks about in their obituary how much money they made or any of these things. They talk about their relationships and their joy and their purpose and their fulfillment. So these really get to be the epicenter, the North Stars of our lives. Mm-hmm. So we can create lives that we know we're going to look back on with just such warm, loving eyes and zero regrets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love all of that. Thank you so much for being here today. Yay. I love this conversation. It was so juicy. We talked about everything from twerking, spirituality, periods. I mean, activism. We covered all of it. It was great.
It's that Shakti. She's flowing.
Yeah, 100%. Where can everybody find you and your community and everything?
Yeah. So my Instagram is I am Sahara Rose. I do lots of reels and dance videos and bringing dance and spirituality together. My podcast is called Highest Self Podcast. We'll definitely have to do a conversation on there. And yeah, and you can just connect with me at iamsaharrose.com. And the quiz is dharmaarchetypequiz.com. You can find it there as well.
It feels so good to drop in with sisters who just understand it, who aren't judgmental, who aren't in competition, where we can share our full expression and not feel shamed for it. So I'm grateful for Bianca for interviewing me and for you for being here on this podcast and tuning in and for being open-minded and honestly being part of the new wave of spirituality that is not just the masculine seated path, but also honors the feminine dance, Shakti, creativity, joy, expression, and fun path, because that is what we're here to co-create in this new paradigm. And I am so excited to have you here. So if you want to drop in further, be sure to join my Sacred Feminine Mystery School, Rose Gold Goddesses, which is all about these tenets, joy, creativity, womb wisdom, and so much more. You can find the link in the show notes below. And if you love this episode, I would love for you to leave a review. And as a free gift, I will send you my free Tune Into Your Womb Wisdom meditation. So this meditation allows you to ask a question to your womb and receive her answer, which is the ultimate way of tuning into your truth, because it's not outside of you, it's actually within. So leave a review over on the iTunes store. You can just look up this podcast, leave a review, take a screenshot before you submit that review and email it over to me at sahara@iamsaharrose.com. You can find that in the show notes as well. I'll send you back that womb meditation. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to share this episode with anyone in your life that might benefit from it. Share it on your stories, share it on your Facebook, share it on your LinkedIn. Like, get this shit out in the world, because we need more people in their bodies, in their joys, in their celebration. Imagine how beautiful this world could look. So thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next one.